Hi, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf, and welcome to my podcast, Cleaning Up the Mental Mess, a podcast where each week I share practical and simple tips and techniques to help you take back control of your mental health and life. In this episode, I sit down with Dr. Henry Cloud to discuss why boundaries are essential for optimal mental health, how to set and stick with boundaries, how to help someone while protecting your own mental health, what boundaries are necessary in marriages, and what boundaries are necessary with children, and how to teach your children to set boundaries, and so much more. Dr. Cloud is an acclaimed leadership expert, psychologist, and best-selling author. He draws on his extensive experience in clinical psychology and leadership development to impart practical and effective advice. Dr. Cloud is a New York Times best-selling author, and his books have sold over 10 million copies. Success magazine named Dr. Cloud in the top 25 most influential leaders in personal growth and development, alongside Oprah, Brené Brown, Seth Godin, and others. He's a frequent contributor to CNN, Fox News Channel, and other national media outlets. You may know Dr. Cloud as the boundaries expert, and I'm so excited to have him on my podcast today. Thank you for tuning in once again to my podcast and for all your support. If you like today's episode, be sure to leave a review on iTunes and share this podcast and this episode with friends and family and on social media. Thank you so much for joining me in the studio today, Dr. Henry Cloud. It's an honor to have you here. I'm really excited to interview you. I love your work. I've followed you for years. We've passed each other in the night in green rooms at different conferences, and it's just so lovely to connect with you in person.
And I appreciate you passing those notes so I'd have something to say on the stage. That was so helpful.
Yeah, it was really good. You helping me helping you. I love the notes.
People don't usually write my talks for me, and I appreciated it.
I love that. Well, it's such an honor to have you here, and your work's been so foundational for so many people, and it's fascinating, your background. We have a similar background. We were just sharing before we started the interview, and I wanted to ask you, the first question is, what got you into researching and writing about boundaries, and why did you find this important enough to write multiple books on the topic?
Well, I didn't start out with a plan to write multiple books on it, for sure. So I'm a clinician, you know, I'm trained as a clinical psychologist. My specialty from early on was adults. And so when you start to work with adults and you look at the clinical spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, depression and anxiety and all the personality disorders and all of that, there's sort of two lenses that people come at that with. One is, you know, they try to just solve problems and give techniques. But the other lens is to ask the question, well, why are these symptoms there, you know, to begin with? And I was always in the, you know, getting to the root of things. And early on, I began to really go deep into the construction of the human personality and the construction of the mind. And when you look at that whole world, really, it's a developmental process. And I early on figured out that, you know, the reason we struggle with depression, anxiety, et cetera, is that the piece of equipment that we are, the person, it's not like I don't think you just treat depression, you treat the person whose mind and body is creating depression. So we're looking at the equipment of how a person is wired. And when you look at that, it just started to totally make sense to me that an adult doesn't show up as an adult. They get there through a developmental process.
Mm, so good.
But things go wrong. Mm. And so some people don't have what they need. Mm. You know, when they're growing up, they don't have the love and the structure and support and emotional regulation and all of that. And so they hit adulthood and there's these gaps inside. It's sort of like the software got laid down with missing code, and then they get abused or something, and you got viruses in the software. I began to look at, how do we restore developmental problems in our personalities so that we no longer get depressed or we no longer have anxiety? And I wrote a book. My first book was called Changes That Heal. And that was a developmental model of how does a person become a person? And there are stages. And the very first stage is attachment. If you have a computer, you plug it in and it's connected to a server and you download software. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you do with a baby. You know, a baby has attachment, and through this relationship, they're downloading a bunch of stuff into their brains, like love and all of these, you know, abilities. But the second step after we're attached and we're in a relationship, then from a little person, what happens in the second year of life? Well, they start to separate and become their own little person. And they start to say no. Yeah. And they're figuring out their boundaries, and they have to hear no. And they have to learn how to be in a relationship and be a separate person. Well, you roll that forward to adulthood, and sometimes people don't experience themselves as separate. So other people can control their thoughts or control their moods or control their functioning. And building boundaries is about achieving that separateness and freedom within a relationship, so the relationship works. And so I wrote Changes That Heal, and Boundaries was the second section of that book. And that's how it all started.
It really did, because you're known as the Boundaries Man, aren't you?
Well,
Associate Henry Cloud Boundaries.
It's a funny story. I'd written Changes That Heal, and John Townsend and I would be out speaking on that. And one day a consultant asked us, so what are all the questions about when you speak on Changes That Heal? And we laughed and we said, oh, all the questions are on boundaries. And he said, why don't you write a book on boundaries? So we said, okay, then we won't have to answer these questions anymore. And that's how it started.
That's amazing. It's basically, you've got all the derivatives of the first boundary book. So it's really reached out to so many different levels, hasn't it?
Your yeah, it's crazy. It still goes. I've got an online platform called boundaries.me that provides ongoing coaching in boundaries. So here we are all these years later, and you know, the problem never goes away. As long as you have a human with another human, there's a boundary in there somewhere. And in a lot of relationships, that boundary is getting violated. And so people have to learn to reestablish those.
Well, just that's so, so valid what you've just said. And I love the fact that you spoke about the mind so much, because a lot of people think mind, brain, the same thing. And you really focus on the mind. Yeah, which is fantastic. Yeah. Now you've mentioned
one of the most important things that anybody can understand is that your mind and your brain are not the same thing.
Oh, good. You're speaking my language. Thank you.
It would be amazing. Like saying the motherboard of a computer and the software is the same thing.
Exactly.
And it's not.
It's not. And yet people are so indoctrinated to think the mind is the brain that they feel they have no control. And I've seen a lot of your work. You talk about people taking control despite what they've gone through. And I love that.
Because the interesting thing is, you know, so much of this stuff, and you know, let's just focus on anxiety for a second. Because we've got panic attacks, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll all of a sudden begin to have a panic attack, and it takes over their, quote, mind. Mm-hmm. That's how they experience it, right? And the body. But they don't realize, you know, by and large, your brain is producing all of these alarm signals. Mm-hmm. And until you separate your mind from your brain, then you're a victim of whatever your brain's doing to you.
Outstanding. That's such a good explanation.
But once you realize, wait a minute, I am not these feelings. I'm not these crazy, intrusive thoughts. I'm separate from that. And once I begin to observe it, and then I can rewrite the code. And now we're on to a better path.
So good. That's so good. Can you define a boundary? Seems to be talking about it. Can you give us a nice, simple definition of boundaries?
The simplest definition that I've always used is a boundary is a property line.
I like that.
So if you think about your house or your apartment or wherever you live, you know, we can look on a map and you can see a property line. And this is your house and you have a neighbor and your neighbor lives next door. And there's a property line that separates the two. Now, what the neighbor is, that's the relationship. Yeah. But you're separate. And so your property line defines some key ingredients of human functioning. Number one is ownership. This is mine. It's not yours. If that's true, then I'm in control of my yard. You're in control of yours. Mm-hmm. You can't step over my fence, or I can't step over your fence with a can of paint and decide I'm going to paint your house purple. But that's what people do in life. They step into other people's boundaries and they start to control them and say, you have to think this way. You have to do what I want. or they take their trash and throw it over the fence and they hurt people and leave the trash in their brain. And so boundaries are reestablishing your own property. And then if you have property, you got a gate, right? And so I would love to have you over into my yard and we can talk and we can hang out because you're a nice person. So I open up my boundary. I invite you in. We have a nice relationship. But then some people, I don't want them coming into my yard because they're going to hurt me. So that's when I close the gate. And boundaries are not walls. Boundaries are permeable. So we open up to good things. We go in and out. I go to your house. You come to mine. That's a relationship. But then if I started to hurt you in some way, you would use the first boundary and say, don't do that. And then if I continued, you'd throw me over the fence, right?
Exactly. That's a good way to
throw the trash out. You throw the trash out and say, look, you can do that if you want to. You're doing it in my yard, not my head.
Exactly. Stay out of my head. Now, that's brilliant. Now, you've got 10 boundaries that you talk about.
Or 10 laws.
10 laws.
Yeah.
Can you briefly walk through those? Just, I know it's a lot. Or just pick out one or two. Like you know what?
Maybe a few of the simplest and most the foundational. The most powerful one, I think, that people can give immediate action to. And this comes from the Bible. There's a law called sowing and reaping.
I like that. I wanted to ask you about that.
And what sowing and reaping says, it's the basic law that makes our lives work. Whatever you sow, that shall you reap. Okay, it's not a moral judgment. It's a law of physics. It can be good or bad. If you get up in the morning and you sow energy and effort and your talents, you sow those to work, then you will reap some kind of a reward, right? If you decide, no, I'm going to sleep 3 more weeks, and you sow into
that.
Just, you know, laziness, then you're going to reap the consequences of that. So it's the way the universe is designed. You know, if I keep my car in the lane, I sow a nice trip. If I sow into the other lane, I'm going to have a wreck. Well, in relationships, what happens is the law of sowing and reaping gets interrupted by something that's commonly called codependency or enabling. So what happens is we're in a relationship. We'll say I'm sowing to irresponsibility. Okay. Let's say I'm taking heroin or I'm a drunk or I don't take control of my anger and I'm a rageaholic. So I'm sowing that. I should be reaping the consequences of that. But if you're an enabler, then what happens is you enable me to not reap the consequences of that. And you're reaping all the pain.
Exactly.
So you're bailing me out. I'm not paying my bills. Instead of reaping, you know, no food on my table, you're writing all my checks for me. I'm not responsibly acting in life, but you're reaping the pain. Exactly. Or I'm not taking control of my anger and I'm screaming at you.
No one's growing.
You're reaping the pain. And so what a boundary does is you come up and say with the law of sowing and reaping, they say, look, I can't stop you from using drugs. I want you to stop. I'll help you stop if you agree to stop, but I can't stop you. But I can stop myself from reaping the consequences of your drug addiction. So that's when you say, I'm no longer going to live with you if you're on heroin. Or I'm not going to be around you if you're screaming drunk. So what you've done is you haven't tried to control me. You've taken control of yourself and your property. And you've said, I can't control you, but I can limit my exposure to you. And what that does is million good things.
So good.
It gets you out of pain. It stops your dependency on my getting well in order for you to have a nice life. But it also leaves me with the consequences. And that can wake somebody up to get sober or to stop yelling at somebody or to get a job or whatever.
One of my New Year's resolutions is to work out more and stay more active. In order to maintain a regular workout routine, it's so vital to stretch and take care of your body pre and post workout. One of my secrets to helping my body recover and feel amazing is my Theragun, an easy to use and absolutely amazing handheld percussive therapy device. I use my Theragun before my Orange Theory workout classes to help wake up my muscles and after my workouts to help with muscle recovery and even during the day to help relieve any stress related to sitting or standing too long. I have already noticed a difference since using my Theragun device. Stiffness, knots, and soreness are no longer issues. And just for my listeners, Theragun is offering an amazing deal. Visit www.theragun.com/leaf and you'll get 2 free attachments with any purchase. The link will also be in the show notes. I actually want to read a quote out of Law 10, the exposure law.
That was everything.
All of it's fantastic. It was hard to pick a quote, but this just caught my attention. You say, because of these fears, we have to have secret boundaries. We withdraw passively and quietly instead of communicating an honest no to someone we love. We secretly resent instead of telling someone that we are angry about how they have hurt us. Often we will privately endure the pain of someone's irresponsibility instead of telling them how their behavior affects us and other loved ones. Information that would be helpful to their soul. There's a lot more, but that just, I just thought that was such a good summary. Can you talk a little bit around that and Lord Tim?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Are you sure I wrote that?
Oh, you wrote that. You did a good job.
I gotta try that.
Yeah, I think so. Me too. I was thinking the same thing. I really liked that. That really caught my eye.
I highlighted
so much, but this one just kind of really jumped out at me.
Well, in the boundaries book, there's 10 laws of boundaries, mm-hmm. kind of how these things work. And the law of exposure basically says that our boundaries are never meant to be secret. If you walk down the street, you can visibly see where somebody's property line is. There's a fence or there's a sidewalk or whatever. Well, in relationships, there's no real visible line other than our skin. So I can step over your fence, right?
Yeah.
I can do something hurtful to you. I can be mean to you or I can do something that's harming you. And if you have a boundary, you'll feel the consequences of that. You might get a headache. Mm-hmm. Or you might get depressed, or you might, begin to lose hope. But that's your internal boundary telling you this is real. Mm-hmm. All right. But it's secret until you put words to it.
That's so good.
So once you expose it, the law of exposure says our boundaries are meant to be seen and known until we, in a visible way, give them up. So if you walk here, I open up my arms, say, come give me a hug. You can see that I'm opening up to you. But sometimes in relationships, somebody's hurting somebody and they're not putting words to their boundaries or they're not putting consequences to their boundaries or they're not enforcing them in any way. So they're secret boundaries. But their body and their mind and their soul is experiencing the reality of those consequences. So we're trying to make what is you're walking around with, the pain you're walking around with, to begin to give expression to that. You give expression to it, it can do its work, but not as long as we're not doing anything about it.
So you've got to get it out of you. You've got to tell people when they've crossed over that mark and caused that pain. So keeping that resentment, it'll become resentment, and then your whole body suffers.
Well, you're the neurobiologist. I mean, what does resentment do to the mind and body?
It changes everything. The structures change completely. You just don't function. You embody everything. And then if it does, I used to tell my patients when I practice and in the work that I do is if you don't get it out, it's going to go in your body.
How about that? Whatever you don't get out is in.
It's in. And your body's we've all got genetic flaws, so it's going to hit the genetic flaw that's the weakest. It's like where the drain, where the water runs down the drain. And that's why this appeals
to me.
Okay,
can you
so
say
much.
That again so everybody can hear that? It's going to hit the genetic flaw.
The flaw in your body, the weakness. So wherever there's a weakness, it's like when you have those flaws where they have drains and the drains or in your courtyard or something and there's a drain and everything's angled towards that drain, so the rainwater will run off into that area. So when we keep resentment inside of us because we haven't exposed our boundaries and we haven't said to someone, that's as far, I need this space, or you've crossed something. If you keep that inside of you, that resentment then is building, it changes all the chemistry, the blood chemistry, changes everything about how you're functioning, embeds inside your brain as a toxic thought, embeds inside your body, every cell of your body. And then wherever there's a genetic flaw, that eventually gets damaged because all this quantum energy that's toxic, which affects the electrical, physical, and chemistry functioning of the body, then hits that weak area. So like the water will all run down to that drain point. That drain point is your weakest area, and that will suffer the most.
And it's different in different people.
Exactly. So someone, it might be GI symptoms. Someone else, it might be cardiovascular. Or someone else, it might be their skin or migraines. Or
their thinking.
Or their thinking.
Their brain thinking's always involved. Screwy. Yeah.
Thinking's always involved, because like you said over there, it's going to people withdraw passively. Or so then there's this unspoken, you know, kind of tension between people. Or
right.
Whatever.
So well, it's interesting, you know, as a clinician in the early years of my practice, one of the things that we were seeing a lot, and I don't know the stats today. I mean, it's for sure still a lot, but I mean, a lot mm-hmm. was I was treating a lot of eating disorders mm-hmm. in women mm-hmm. and a lot of bulimia and a lot of anorexia. And associated with that, you would see oftentimes a lot of panic attacks. And that's where the brain, you know, the amygdala just goes crazy,
yeah.
right? And it's telling your body something's wrong. And so what people do is they're experiencing all of that alarm system going off in your body.
Yeah.
Well, your brain's got to make sense of, or your mind's got to make sense of that. So here you are, you're feeling this feeling of dread. And so your brain, your mind, both will go, I'm feeling scared. There must be a reason. Oh, the plane is going to crash. I better mm-hmm. avoid the plane. And then they don't get on the flight and they calm down for a minute. And mm-hmm. what they've done is they've tried to explain why my body is going crazy.
Mm.
What they don't realize a lot of times is whatever this phobia is or this panic, that's your mind's attempt to try to make sense of how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, what you're feeling is you're walking on the planet with no control of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So the alarm system's going crazy. So they would talk about a panic disorder or, you know, an eating disorder. And when I would say, let's talk about boundaries, it would seem like, why in the world are you changing the topic? Well, I'm not changing the topic. Because if you could get back in control of your life, where your brain can go to sleep, it can't go to sleep if there's burglars breaking in the door all the time.
Exactly.
But you start to get in control of your life. There's an alarm system that's working. You can go to sleep because everything's okay. Well, then the panic goes away.
Yeah, that's good. The eating disorder
goes away. All these symptoms, because you're rewriting software, again, that controls what your brain does.
Exactly.
And which is a lot of your work of rewriting, getting the mind to get back in control instead of the goofy alarm systems.
Exactly. It's that control element that you brought up is just so vital, because when you feel out of control, you just feel like you can't do anything. And that's very scary for people. You know, talking.
Oh, gosh. Think about it. I used to use the example about boundaries all the time. Think about this. You're driving down the freeway.
Yeah.
And you're holding on the wheel. You look in the lane next to you, and there's a psycho cocaine addict in the lane next to you. And then he turns his steering wheel, and your car moves.
Yeah.
And then you try to correct it, and you can't. And somebody else has control of
your car.
Well, wouldn't you be panicked?
Total.
Take the steering wheel back.
Mm.
Get some boundaries and say no to a bunch of this stuff. You'll find out you can stay in your lane.
That's what I want to ask you next. How do we do that? So I want some, let's talk a little bit specifically. Like, for example, what are boundaries necessary in a romantic relationship? I want to talk to you about children, parenting. Could we do a little bit of that, Henry? Is that okay
with you?
So what are some vital boundaries that are necessary in relationships, romantic relationships? Let's start there. Not just general relationships, so romantic relationships. What would you, and how would you implement them?
Well,
first
of all, so I want you to distinguish when you say romantic relationship, just define the difference, because there are some differences.
Of course.
But basically, a lot of what goes awry in romantic relationships are the same issues that go awry in any relationship.
Mm.
And you're just closer. So you're going to experience him more.
Intensely.
You're going to experience him sooner. But you're going to experience him at a depth that you don't experience where there is, let's call it a less deep attachment. So in a romantic relationship, you know, a romantic relationship is designed for oneness. Mm-hmm. So if you go back to way back in the beginning, the story of the Garden of Eden, mm-hmm. the two shall become one. Mm-hmm. Okay. So obviously there's a physical metaphor to that. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the ultimate romantic relationship is in a marriage where the two bodies become one. So what you've done is you've given up your boundaries, but you haven't lost your boundaries. Mm. Now, that's a key distinction.
Okay. Have you redefined your boundaries, basically?
You've redefined them because, see, you become one in that you've joined the other person, right? But there's still two people experiencing that oneness. And they have their own different experience of that oneness. Now, what you're doing in a romantic relationship is you're trying to get the oneness to work in a way that it's still good for the two that are and have become one. Now, the physical is easy to describe because that's easy.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about the metaphysical, when you're talking about the soul, we're talking about the mind, the heart. When two people in a romantic relationship, what you've done is you're opening up your heart, mind, and soul to somebody at a much deeper level than ever. And so what that means is it ups the ante. If we're in a romantic relationship, we're much closer than, you know, the guy you're talking to at the counter at the hamburger joint, right? And so what that means is that we're really, really close, okay? So like a surgeon, if you see a surgeon, I just witnessed heart surgery a few months back. I was in the OR with a friend of mine who does it. And I'm watching him and he's inside the heart of a person. The care, the control that he had of himself so he would help the person and not hurt them. That's how this works. So you get in a romantic relationship. It really, really becomes important for each person to be in control of themselves because they're literally inside the heart of somebody else.
That's a good analogy.
So you want to control your feelings. If we're in a deep relationship and let's say I'm bugged with you. Well, if I'm in control of myself, then I'm going to regulate that. And I'm going to say, you know, Caroline, when you said that or you did that, that hurt. And can you do it in a different way? Or can we talk about that? Because in the expression of my feelings, I don't want to infect you with more hurt. But I could if I got angry, if I screamed at you, if I got abusive. In a romantic relationship, people have to be in control of their feelings and express those well. They have to be in control of their attitudes. You know, 90 bazillion percent of how a relationship works
is
comes from your view of the other person.
Exactly.
So if you're walking around with a bunch of judgmental, blamey thoughts, then you are going to infect the relationship. So you got to get in control of how you're thinking about the other person. Are you forgiving? Are you accepting? Are you understanding? You know, I talked about open the gate. You know, if I come over to your house, I can bring you a pizza or I can bring you a pipe bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
So in expressions of things, am I giving you empathy? Am I giving you care? All of those kinds of things that are in normal relationships are intensified in romantic relationships.
Very good. Yeah.
And what we see, especially today, and it goes back, I think, even obviously since the beginning of time, but really in the 60s with the sexual revolution, Rollo May, one of my favorite writers, wrote a book called Love and Will. And I think it was in that book, he said that, referring back to the Garden of Eden, you know, so when Adam and Eve realized that they were, you know, imperfect, they covered themselves with fig leaves, but they covered their private parts, right? Because that's our most vulnerable. In the Bible, the word no, or the word sex is the word no, not N-O, like
K-N-O-W.
Yeah. A lot of the religious people think it's N-O, but, you know, it's K-N-O-W. It means to know someone. Well, that metaphor of we cover the area that symbolizes the most the deepest oneness with the person mm-hmm. is sexuality. In romantic relationships, like Rollo May said, in modern times, we've taken the fig leaf off of our genitals mm-hmm. and put it onto our face.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Think about that. Mm-hmm. So now you have people giving up their mm-hmm. bodies freely, which is supposed to be the most intimate mm-hmm. oneness you can have with a person. Mm-hmm. Giving that up freely, but never being known inside mm-hmm. of their soul. And you see these instant hookups that go bad later, because once you start to open up the Christmas package and yeah. know what's inside, yeah. then the relationship can't make it because people don't have the internal boundaries to sustain it.
I recently discovered Noom while searching for some helpful tools on my personal wellness journey and absolutely love it. Because everyone is different, Noom adjusts to your lifestyle. They teach you the psychology behind the decisions you make and then help you keep track of everything from workouts and steps to analyzing your diet and recommending healthy recipes. Noom also connects you with a personally assigned goal specialist and a community of other Noomers, so you have all the support you need to empower your change. Noom is not a diet, it's a healthy and easy to stick to way of life. Noom doesn't tell you what to do and what not to do. It teaches you how to look inside your own mind and make better decisions for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom. That is noom.com/Dr. Leaf. The link will also be in the show notes.
And so one of the things in romantic relationships, the ones that work and work well, is that there is a progression of boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And exposure. I would assume the law of exposure is important, that people are really talking about. So important to
absolutely
explain how you feel.
So, and it's not rocket science. Mm-hmm. If somebody showed up at your front door mm-hmm. that you didn't know,
yeah,
you don't open the door and say, "Hey, I don't really know you well. What's your name?" Sam. Okay, Sam. Hey, come on back to my bedroom.
Yeah.
Nobody would do that, especially metaphorically. What do?
Is a relationship
Well, first of all, you don't even open the door, right? You look through the people mm-hmm. and say, who's there? If they show proper identification, then if it's a FedEx guy, what do? Well, you actually step out on the front porch and you close the door behind you mm-hmm. and you get to know this person. So after you get to know them a little bit, then you find out, oh, we have some people yeah. in common. Then you invite them into the living room. And then you hang out there, and maybe, you know, as the relationship progresses, mm-hmm. gradually
you can then get
more and more of your heart. But you,
if I'm hearing
it's progressive.
Progressive and authentic and honest and open yeah. and it's speak about it. Don't keep it in. It's get that out and talk and share as time goes on. Because I don't think people talk and share enough, do they, in relationships, which is, I know when I practice clinically, I found that that was a big issue to get people to share. And on that
and
note,
it's all external now.
It's exactly. It's got to be it's extrinsic versus intrinsic. What about with a parent and a child, parenting, relationship boundaries, in that relationship, what are the boundaries in parenting?
It's.
How do you see that?
Don't even get me started. Do we have 3 weeks to talk here?
Well, let's try and do that in a few minutes because I want to ask you more questions. See, what could you tell us in terms of how? Because we have a lot of parents that obviously listen in on this show. And
yeah.
how can they bring healthy boundaries into the relationship that they can be the best parents? That's a big question. Can you make a nice, simple how?
I'm going to give you the simplest answer.
Yes.
Stop controlling your kids.
Great. I love that
Stop.
Answer.
Controlling
that's really good.
Your kids. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your job from day one mm-hmm. is to not control your kids and help your kids get in control of themselves.
Oh, that's so
it's
good.
Called self-control.
That's very, very good.
When my girls, I've got two daughters. How old are they now? They're 17 and 19. When they got to be teenagers, I sat them down. I said, okay, girls, you're about to become teenagers. Let me tell you how this is going to work. Okay. You're going to want a lot of freedom and more freedom. And there is nothing I want to give you more. And let me tell you how much I want to give you. I want to give you 100% freedom. Mm-hmm. Okay. I do not have any desire to control you. I've got better things to do. But in order for that to work, you got to be in control of yourselves. So we're going to have a formula. Okay. And here's how this formula works. It's a mathematical formula. Freedom equals responsibility equals love. And those will always be, as long as
that's
I'm
good.
Your dad.
Freedom equals responsibility
equals love. And as long as you're here, those will always be equal. Okay. I'm going to give you 100% freedom if you use that 100% responsibly. Mm-hmm. And we're going to define responsibly by love. Is it hurting you or anybody else? Mm-hmm. Then you're fine. If you don't use it responsibly, you're doing something destructive to you or somebody else, then the freedom is going to go down. So they're equal. Mm-hmm. So real life example. We went on a spring break ski trip. Our family, my oldest daughter, Olivia, was a senior in high school at the time. She invited her friend, Vanessa. So we're coming back from the trip. We get stalled in Salt Lake City Airport. We're sitting there. It's late Sunday night, 7 or 8 before we take off. School day the next day. Olivia says, Dad, can Vanessa... And then she stopped. I said, what? She goes, well, I was going to ask you if Vanessa could spend the night, but I know what you're going to say. I said, what? She said, well, you're going to say no because it's a school night. I said, Olivia, why are you asking me such a stupid question? Mm-hmm. And she goes, well, what do you mean? I said, why are you asking me if Vanessa can spend the night with you? She goes, well, because it's a school night. I think you probably won't. I go, Olivia, you ought to know how I'm going to answer that question. Yeah, you're going to say no. No, Olivia, how am I going to answer that question?
Yeah.
And she goes, the formula? I said, the formula. I said, look, I have not had to talk to you about schoolwork since the 4th grade. You're the most responsible person I've ever seen in getting all your schoolwork done. You got a 4.4 average, okay? You have total freedom in that area because you're 100% responsible. Now, my hunch, and I haven't said anything to you since probably the 4th grade. My hunch is, if you had a test tomorrow or something and Vanessa spending the night was going to screw you up or it was going to hurt her in some way, you wouldn't be asking me. So why are you asking me these stupid questions? You figure it out. And Vanessa looks at me and goes, can you talk to my parents?
That's great.
The point is,
she had to figure it out herself. She had to work it
because
out
and ask those why
she's
questions. Been responsible. So your goal is to give up more and more control. So
you're saying to give control helps the person to build their own boundaries.
As long as you're holding them responsible for how they use that. Okay.
Yep.
So
very good.
If they're able to, you give them a little more than they're able to handle, and then you use those failures as training with consequences. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, you get to play in the yard, but you got to get your homework done before dinner. Well, they don't get the homework done. Well, then I guess you don't play in the yard tomorrow,
yeah.
You know, until you, and they learn.
They learn,
but that's
yeah.
not what parents do.
No, they
parents
do it for
go,
them.
Or they do it for them, or they nag them. You need to go get up there. Yeah, I told you, they come back to me and say, you need to get up. If I were king, what I would tweet,
yeah,
I would outlaw the phrase, you need.
That's good.
Out of parents' mouth.
That's
because
really
Johnny's
good.
On the couch watching video games. Mom comes down and says, you need to get up there and do your homework. Johnny is experiencing no need to do his homework.
No, because she's taking his responsibility. Whereas if he doesn't do his homework and has to pay the price the next day, he's learned a lesson.
And you know what?
Yeah.
He'll have a thought that goes through his head. If she says, Johnny, you know, we're going to the basketball game. But the only people that are going are the ones who have done their chores, and I got to do some stuff. Your dad's got to do some stuff, and I'll check in with you at 6. And if you've done your stuff, that you can, then you can go. If not, then you're staying here with the babysitter from hell. and so she walks out of the room.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Johnny has a thought he's never had before, mm-hmm. and that thought is, crap. I need to go get my homework done. See, he needs to do it now.
Yeah. As you put the responsibility, he's making the choices.
The control.
He's controlling his reactions, the control. That's so good. That's excellent. You wrote a book on boundaries for leaders. Can you talk a little bit about this book and share a couple of tips or one tip that really jumps out at you?
Yeah. Whatever it is you lead. I mean, even if it's a parent leading kids, mm-hmm. you know, you got a vision, mm-hmm. right? Like a company has a vision. Well, you got a vision. We got to get everybody in the van to school by 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Well, you got a vision. Well, then if everybody's late and you're the one in charge, then it's on your watch. So you're going to get what you tolerate. And so if
you're going to get what you tolerate.
Yes.
Very good.
In Boundaries for Leaders, the cover of the book says you have to realize you are ridiculously in charge. Mm. So if you've got a team that's got poor morale or dysfunction or they're not performing and you're in charge of it, then you are doing one of two things. You're either creating that problem mm-hmm. or you're allowing that problem.
Very good. You're either creating or
creating
allowing.
Creating or allowing. If you're in charge.
You have to look at yourself if you're in charge.
Yeah. Yeah, so boundaries for leaders. The leader is in charge, whether it's a team or an entire company. And they're in charge of some very, very important boundaries mm-hmm. that the neuroscience behind it is we know how people's brains work in order to perform. But if you're leading people in a way that their brains can't follow you as a leader, then they're not going to perform. Mm. And there's a handful of boundaries that leaders have to execute to make the people's brains work. And the first one is they have to be in charge of the emotional climate of how people, you know, if somebody's getting yelled at and there's fear and all that kind of stuff,
toxic work environment,
their prefrontal cortex can't work, right? It's being flooded and overcome by fight or flight syndrome and thinking shuts down and all that. You have to make it a safe place. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is the boundaries of attention. So more and more people at work, they're basically creating ADD companies.
Oh, certainly. That I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you talk to a neuroscientist, mm-hmm. which I'm doing, they'll tell you that this thing called multitasking is a myth.
Yes, yeah,
you can't
totally.
Do it. Your brain cannot do that. It can only focus on one thing at a time. So boundaries create focus. So what a leader's
got
to do.
Boundaries create focus.
Absolutely.
So we can do one thing consciously at a time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And if a leader knows how the executive functions of the brain work, mm-hmm. and when you talk about the executive functions of the brain, what you have your brain has to do to execute something, mm-hmm. then there's three things you have to worry about. Number one, it's got to attend to what is relevant. If you're driving down the road, there's a couple of things you got to attend to, the speed, your lane, oncoming mm-hmm. traffic. Can't attend to anything else. Somebody starts texting, they lose it. Mm-hmm. So you've got to attend to what's relevant. A leader's got to keep what's important in front of people at all times. And there can't be more than a couple of things. Mm-hmm. If everything's important, nothing is.
Exactly.
Second thing is the brain's got to do, it's got to inhibit everything that's not important. So you can't go bombing them with 8,000 emails yes. that sound as important as the main thing. So you got to attend to what's relevant. You got to inhibit.
And that's a mind decision. You've got to.
That's a mind decision.
The person has to use their mind to inhibit.
That's right. And the leader's got to make it. You know,
facilitate
structured.
The process.
So, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is something called working memory. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that the brain has got to keep that in front of it mm-hmm. all the time. It's in RAM. It's got to mm-hmm. be pulled up. The program's mm-hmm. got to be open. So you attend to what's relevant. You inhibit what's mm-hmm. not. And you keep it in front of people all the time. And they'll execute.
That's really good. I like that. That's fantastic.
There's four or five others in there, but the book's Boundaries for Leaders.
Boundaries for Leaders. We'll put that in the show notes as well so people can find that out. Digestion is a big problem for so many people I meet today. And without strong digestion, you'll battle to reach the level of mental health and performance you deserve. A balanced gut microbiome, something the right probiotic can help you achieve, helps turn the food you eat into nutrients your brain can use. While there are countless probiotics out there, there's one from a company called Bioptimizers that I have found to be especially impressive. It's called P3-OM. P3-OM helps with protein digestion, which then helps deliver more essential amino acids and other nutrients to your brain, and help with neurotransmitters that boost your mood and mental health. You can get a free bottle of P3-OM shipped out today by going to www.p-3-o.m.com/leaffree and use the coupon LEAFFREEP3OM. The link will be in the show notes. Henry, what about people that respond negatively to you exposing your boundaries, you know, the law team? How do you deal with people that fight that, get angry or whatever?
Well, first of all, you've got to make a shift. I remember I was doing a seminar one night and the lady said, well, what do you do with a controlling person? If you're in a relationship with a controlling person.
That's a question I get asked often.
I said, you convert them. Now, we happen to be in a church at the mm-hmm. seminar. She goes, well, they have no interest in my... I said, I didn't say anything about converting them to God. You convert them from being a controlling person to a frustrated person.
Oh, that's so good.
She said, what do you mean? I said, no, hear me on this. There is no such thing as a controlling person.
So your perception's wrong.
As soon as I say no to a controlling person... they're not in control of me. But now they've turned into a frustrated person because mm-hmm. they can't get what they want. So as long as you're giving in, you can say, they're controlling me. Well,
you're allowing it.
You're allowing it. You're always in control. I mean, unless somebody's mm-hmm. physically tying you hostage or something. But mm-hmm. as soon as you say no, then that's going to diagnose what kind of person am I dealing with. If you're dealing with somebody that's loving, they respect your no.
Move back, yeah.
Yeah, if I stepped on your toe, we're sitting here, mm-hmm. you know, in this interview, if I stepped on your toe and said, oh, that hurt. Don't do that. I'd mm-hmm. say, oh my gosh, Carolyn, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. I would take control of my behavior mm-hmm. that's hurting you, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't do that anymore. But mm-hmm. if I'm what the Bible calls a fool, mm-hmm. then I can't stand correction, or I can't stand mm-hmm. the limit. Mm-hmm. And you say, you stepped on my toe. What would I do immediately if I'm a fool? Well, that's because you stuck it out in front of me. Just that's because you have big feet. That's because you're always getting in my, and I would start blaming you. Mm-hmm. And so you are going to run into people that don't like limits.
And what do?
You empathize and you hold the limit.
Good. I like that.
So mm-hmm. if I say no and you get mad mm-hmm. or you try to manipulate mm-hmm. me, let's role play it.
Okay.
Okay, so you ask me something and I'm going to say no to it.
Why did you stand on my toe?
Well, that's a why question.
Oh, that's true.
No, you're the controlling person.
Okay.
Okay, so you're going to ask me to do something and I'm going to say no.
Can you go pick up this for me and go and do all my errands today?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I've got, I can't do it.
Why? I'm busy. I need you to do it.
I'm sorry. That's really, I got stuff to do and I can't do it.
But I've also got stuff to do. Why aren't you doing it for me? Mine's more important than yours.
I'm sorry. Did I said no? What is it about that?
I do so much for you. Why won't you?
I know, and I really appreciate those things. I'm sorry I can't do it. I know that's frustrating to you, but I can't do that.
And that person can go away and deal with their stuff and do it themselves.
Yeah. See, what you're asking me to do mm-hmm. is you're asking me to have to justify so that you can overcome my argument. Give me
very good.
And I'm not going to. No is a complete sentence.
So no is a complete sentence.
So I don't have to justify it. Now, and most of the time we do say, gosh, I'm sorry. I'd love to, but I got another meeting. Yeah. Well, that's fine. But if they're trying to wear you down and you just stop, say, you know what? I said no. I'm really sorry that that's frustrating to you. I understand that why it would be frustrating, but I'm not going to choose to do that. Good. You reset the limit, but you empathize. Instead of justify.
That's so
I'm sorry that's so frustrating.
You reset the limit and you empathize instead of justify. Yeah. You know that will free so many people.
Yeah, you're done.
Just that alone.
Keep going.
So now, okay, so you got to the point where...
No, just keep going. And I say, no, I can't do it.
Okay, so what do you expect me to do now?
No, I don't know. It leaves you with a kind of a dilemma, doesn't it?
It does.
That's
I'm
hard.
I'm probably going to have to see if I can do this myself.
I'm sorry. That's hard.
So good.
It sounds like you're really busy today.
I'm really busy.
It would really help you if I would abandon my life and make myself miserable and get migraines for 3 weeks and not be able to function. And I'm kidding.
And that's what that person wants you to do, but it says literally. So they put, there's the term we have in South Africa for that kind of thing is where someone tries to put the gorilla on your back. Don't take someone else's gorilla. You know, so you go to a point and then you've got, and that's, if I'm hearing you correctly, that's what you're saying. But that's a mind decision and it's a choice decision. You've got to know yourself. You've got to know your identity in order to set your boundaries.
That's a key point. You know, a lot of people, it's like a fish doesn't know it's wet. You know, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is out of the book of Hebrews, and it says that solid food is for the mature. Now think about this. Babies, you don't give them solid food. Well, solid food, adult life, like relationships, mm-hmm. for example, marriage, you know, careers, all mm-hmm. that's for mature people. We try to grow up kids mm-hmm. to be mature. And here's what it says, solid food. So look, close relationships are for the mature. Mm-hmm. And then the verse says this, who through practice mm-hmm. have had their senses trained to discern good from evil. So if you start manipulating me mm-hmm. and I'm in touch with myself, a little button goes off inside of me.
Very good. You know it. You can sense
that feeling. Well, you know, as a neuroscientist, this goes all the way down your spine.
Absolutely.
It'll start to tell you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I sense that and I start to feel uncomfortable. And I say, you know what? I don't really feel comfortable with that. I don't want to do that. But a lot of people, in their growing up years, or they've been gaslighted, for example, in their growing up years, somebody will hurt them and they'll say something and the other person will say, what? Well, it doesn't hurt. That's not a big deal. I didn't really do anything.
And devaluing the experience.
They're invalidating and talking them out of their senses. So they've lost touch with what actually hurts them. And they've normalized it. So part of boundaries recovery in adulthood is you got to get back in touch with your feelings.
That's really good.
So you know when something hurts because you've been talked out.
But you haven't suppressed it or been talked out of it.
Right.
So you mentioned the word gaslighting. Can you quickly define and just talk for a minute or so about that?
Well, it's a popular term now. It's an old term, actually. But, you know, basically you get talked out of your mind. Or you get convinced out of your mind where you lose your own reality. And when somebody's in a controlling, manipulative relationship, they're invalidating you so much, or they're distorting reality so much. You hear this all the time, people with bad boundaries. Somebody does something to them and they'll say, well, I know it's my fault. I should have. Because they've been convinced in this relationship that they're the bad guy. They're the perpetrator. No, they're not. They're the victim. And until they give a voice to that, then gaslighting is when somebody invalidates you. They start to make you feel like you're the sick one, you're the crazy one. You know, you see a lot of times people say, am I crazy or what? They're really asking a question.
Yeah, they're confused.
This other person's confused them. Now they have control of them. If you can confuse somebody,
you've got control over them. That's very good. You've confused someone, or you've been confused by someone. You are controlling, or you're letting someone control you. What about narcissism? That's also something that's just, I don't like labels. I think labels lock them in, but it describes symptoms.
Well, it describes behaviors,
behaviors. Yeah. And how would you describe a person? What would you say about narcissism?
Well, narcissism is, you know, the simplest definition is it's self-love, right? But some people have turned it into an art form. I mean, you know, we all have to have good feelings about ourselves so we can function. Yeah. But ultimately, narcissism is, in its malignant form, it's about something called egocentricity, where I am the center of the universe. Well, if I'm the center of the universe, then you live in my orbit.
And I control you and you do everything for
me. Well, no. If I'm the center, if I'm the narcissist,
yes, everyone does everything for you.
Then you exist for me. Just like the planets revolve around the sun. Well, a narcissist wants everything to revolve around them. So they're always, always, always using every relationship to manipulate people to either make them feel good or worship them or idealize them or give them all their time and energy and this and the other. And the person starts to become invisible because they're not a person unto themselves in that relationship.
So what is the advice you give someone who's in a relationship with people that are acting like a narcissist?
Well, I did a lot of sections. And if you go to boundaries.me, I've got a lot of even, you know, telling you how to talk to them stuff.
Yeah, so you've done a lot of good stuff.
The very first thing is back to what we said, you know, if you're in a relationship, a good relationship is mutual. So what that means is there's enough space in the relationship for two people's needs to get met, for two people to be appreciated, for two people to be given to, somebody's giving, there's this flow, right? Well, in a narcissistic relationship, what happens is you begin to feel like the mutuality is missing.
That makes sense.
And so you start to feel invisible, like they don't listen to you, or you give and you never get anything in return. And not that we give to get, but in any good relationship, you know, I pet my dog and she licks me.
Exactly. Right? There's a response.
Some kind of response. Yeah. And you start to feel like this is one-sided. And so the first step is getting in touch with that feeling.
Acknowledging that you feel that this is one-sided.
You feel that. And then you got to start to put some words to that.
Express it. Okay.
Best not done in, you know, in some big moment. Best done when it's not happening. Say, you know, I want to talk a little bit about how we relate. And I know you love me, and I know our relationship is our relationship's important to me. It is to you. But a lot of times I find that, you know, we're mostly doing what you want to do. And I need some time for us to do some things I want to do too. Or we're mostly talking about what's going on in your life. And I just need to ask, interested in what I'm feeling or I want, or so you just have a conversation, and then from
and if
there,
they don't respond, you do the, like the role play earlier on. You've actually got to then almost
move on. And you know, a lot of times they'll kind of revert it immediately back to them and just say, "Well, hold on a second. Right now, we're talking about me. We can talk about you later, but right now," and try to keep it focused and see if they can get it. Ultimately, like you get in a marriage or something, a tough relationship with a narcissist, generally. I would say almost all the time, what is going to require is a third party. And that's where going to a good counselor, you know, and they can begin to, because it's sort of like dialysis, you know, the toxic stuff runs through the therapist and they can get it in a way said that maybe they can hear. Hopefully.
In a different way. Yeah, that's a really good thing. Okay, we've got to wrap this up soon. Gosh, Henry, there's so much I want to ask you still, but what is something that keeps you up at night and something that gets you up every morning?
Something that keeps me up at night and something that gets me up every morning. Well, I can wake up in the night for two reasons. One is stress, okay? And it's generally, I'm by and large a pretty good sleeper, but generally, it's because I haven't given my brain and my mind the time it needs to process something.
Very good. I love that.
Because your brain's going to try to finish something. It's going to complete a loop.
Angel mind. Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm overwhelmed, by definition, meaning I've got more going on than I'm giving adequate time to process, it's going to wake me up and say, will you listen to me now? You're not listening to me in the daytime.
That's
and that
so
problem's going to come back.
I really like that you haven't processed adequately.
I got to process it. And so, like, I'll give you an example. In the last year, a lot of things are changing and just a lot of stuff in my business world. And I was, you know, I'm looking at plans and strategies and spreadsheets around the clock and all this kind of stuff and reorganizing things. And I started waking up and I realized, you know what? I've been working on this stuff, but I'm not giving any time to observe and sit down and get above it and process it. So I had to partition out not working time, but
processing
thinking
time.
About that it is, all and talking it out with a trusted advisor or two. And I've got to do that long before I go to sleep so it can calm down. You know, if I do right before I go to bed, boom, I'm going to wake up. What gets me up in the morning? Well, first of all, and I laugh when I say this, but my family, I mean, I'm going to wake up to hilarious, crazy people.
I love that.
And so I think for me, life, you know, under God it's about love and work. And so the people you love the most, your friends, your family, your spiritual family, you know, your marriage, your relationship, whatever it is you're in that's most important. We're going to dinner with some friends tonight, and it's been set up for 2 days. I found yesterday, midday, I started feeling the endorphins just thinking about seeing them tonight.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
you know, and so when we have things that the brain is looking forward to, you know, it's going to activate a lot of good stuff. So in your love and in your work, if there are things, doesn't mean they're not hard, but if there are things that are positive, so there's hard things that are positive, there's hard things that are toxic. So if you got stuff going on that you're looking forward to, you're not going to have trouble getting out of bed.
Oh, I love that. That's incredible. Henry, where can people find out more about you, your work, your podcast, and your books?
Yeah, if you go to drcloud.com, you can kind of see everything. We're talking about boundaries. Where I would direct you immediately, first step would be go to boundaries.me.
Okay.
And what that is I've developed an online, we call it an online coaching relationship between me and the audience. And you sign up and I'm feeding you stuff all the time. There's 60 or 70 pretty in-depth courses on that platform of how to deal with a narcissist, how to deal with the extended family, how to reach your goals, what goes wrong when we don't, depression, anxiety, stress. All these topics are on boundaries.me.
That's
a cool place to send people.
Fantastic. We'll put that into the show notes and so people can find that link very easily. You're just a pillar of wisdom. You have so much insight and it's a pleasure to
just a lot of miles, actually.
A lot of miles. Well, they're good miles. You've done some good miles there. So that was fascinating. Thank you so much. And I hope that we'll be able to continue this discussion in another podcast one day and do it again. And it's been amazing having you on the show. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's been good.
Thank you.
I hope you found today's podcast interesting and helpful. If you want more tips and help with managing anxiety, depression, and mental health, be sure to visit my website at drleaf.com and to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I also include a schedule of my speaking events and so much more. And follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just look for Dr. Caroline Leaf. Also, I love seeing all your posts on social media about this podcast. I love seeing what resonates with you and what you've learned. So be sure to continue posting and tagging me and letting me know what you think and how these tips worked out for you. And don't forget, leave a review and keep spreading the word about this podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I really hope you learned something new and helpful. Till then, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf. This podcast represents the opinions of myself and my guests. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for educational and informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional for any individual medical questions you may have. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors.